Today we are here at the South Carolina State Museum, live from South Carolina State Museum, right here in Columbia. And I'm here in front of an old-time radio studio with Tut Underwood. Let's see what Tut has to say.
Radio studio at a small radio station in South Carolina. It's got equipment, microphones, turntables, transmitters, etc., from a lot of different real radio stations in South Carolina. The South Carolina Broadcasters Association donated the equipment and helped us put it together. But we're talking about radio and television, just broadcasting in general. So it's kind of fitting that we start off the radio broadcast with historic radio.
Absolutely. And of course, let's see, we're going to have a tour of this here. Then what are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about an abstract art exhibit.
That's right. We've got a very abstract thinker here. Our art curator, Paul Matheny, also known as Dirt Boy, he's going to talk about our brand new abstract art exhibit. And it's a beautiful thing, as you all saw a little earlier. And it just shows the range and depth of art here in South Carolina. We're a leader, you know, in a lot of things nationally. And thanks to people like Brian Rutenberg and other internationally known artists, we're a leader in modern art as well.
Absolutely. Well, Paul, why do they call you Dirt Boy?
Not too many people do that, mostly Tut, but one of the main reasons is because I really focus a lot on some of South Carolina's traditional art forms like pottery.
And so we're not far from Edgefield,
exactly.
And I understand you have some great Edgefield pottery here.
We do. We have quite a few. Our collection of Edgefield pottery is great. We have a lot of work by Dave and Thomas Chandler and all the famous people that you know and associate with Edgefield pottery. In fact, one new piece that recently came in is a new verse pot that's from 1834 made by Dave. It's got a wonderful verse on it. It says, "Oh, the moon and stars, hard work to make big jars." And it's a 10-gallon jar. So it's a really beautiful piece.
Well, you know, we're from Greenwood, and of course,
Piedmont
Tech up there has an Edgefield Pottery School down there now, so they're doing quite well with that.
Yeah, I've seen some of the work coming out of there. It's really great to have that and have Steve Farrell down there and all the people kind of reviving that tradition in South Carolina.
Now, but they call you Dirt Boy because?
Because of the pottery exhibits that we do here. One of the first shows that we did was actually a show I did when I worked at the Museum of York County, and that show traveled here about the same time I came here to work 11 years ago, and it was called The Difference in Dirt. So that's kind of where that title stems from.
And you actually do pottery right here? You do demonstrations?
Well, I personally don't, but we do have volunteers that come in every Thursday from 11 to 3 that actually turn pottery on a recreated 19th century potter's wheel. Paul Moore comes in. Sometimes there are potters on Sundays as well. But we do. We have demonstrations. A lot of people don't know how pottery was made, so they can see, as Billy Henson, one of the famous folk potters, says, how people do it the old-timey way.
You know, that is one of the beautiful things about the museum is you are learning how people did things the old-timey ways. Right, Tom?
That's right. I mean, you know, museums are about old things, and people typically think about all the old stuff. And, of course, we have lots of new things, too. So it's a great place to learn about the history of South Carolina and things that are going on right now.
Well, Tut, why don't you tell us what we're going to try to cover here today? Because we're going to try to cover a whole lot here in a very short period of time.
Okay. Well, Paul started out talking about the pottery and stuff. Y'all haven't got into the abstract art, though, right? So we'll talk a little bit about abstract art, and then we'll talk a little bit about more about radio and television. Then we'll go down and we'll talk about the three Charleses in our space science exhibit, because we have three men from South Carolina Charles who have impacted the history of the world, and they're all from here in South Carolina.
Isn't that amazing that people that, you know, the impression sometimes is that South Carolina is a little backward state here.
Well, sometimes in some ways it may be, but in other ways we have just magnificent brains that come out of this state that really, like I say, have a major impact. Some of them are artistic, some of them are scientific, some of them are historic. So the South Carolina State Museum is all about showing people what the state of South Carolina has produced artistically, scientifically, historically, and its natural features as well. So, you know, we like to say this is a one-stop shop for learning about South Carolina culture and history. We call it South Carolina Under One Roof. So we'll get to a lot of this as the hour goes on, but right now I guess we ought to let Dirt Boy tell you a little bit more about the brand new abstract art here in South Carolina.
Well, Dirt Boy, what can you tell us about abstract art? I mean, gee, Paul, you do have a name. Why is abstract art important to you?
Oh, abstract art is just one of the many facets of South Carolina art history. You know, we were talking about innovation, the innovation found in South Carolina. You know, I can't go on without saying that you're standing in one of the greatest innovations in the state and nationally. The textile mill that the museum's built in was actually the first fully electric textile mill in the world. And speak of innovation, that's one great thing that we need to say. But our art collection here and our art focus for our art exhibits, we look at things from 1590 through the present. So the abstract exhibit is one great example of that time period that we look at for our visual culture. And I just love the abstract art and the abstract artists and the work that they create because it's something new, it's genuine, and it's presented here for the first time inclusively.
Well, our abstract art is all about the particular person, how you interpret it.
Right, it is. Not just the artist, but the viewer as well. You know, every artist comes at it from a different angle, and all the people that view it bring their own experiences to what they see. So everything means something different to each one, whether it's emotional or reminds them of music or the broken down decay of paint in Charleston, as William Halsey always referred to in his work. All those things are looked at by the artists and the individuals that come to the museum every day.
Now, this exhibit just opened. How long is it actually going to be there? How long is it going to be there?
It just opened a couple of weeks ago. It'll be here through August the 26th, and we'll have programs every third Thursday beginning in April where some of the artists will come in and talk about their work and kind of the art history of the state.
Okay, so this will be going on till
August the 26th.
August the 26th. You know, one of the things about the museum down here that I find phenomenal, it is very, very affordable to come here.
That's right, it sure is. People come here all the time. It's a very affordable treat and thing for families to do and school groups to come through and visit. Absolutely.
You know, Tut was actually showing me the who's the painter who is actually from lives in New York, is from South Carolina originally, mm-hmm. who works with throwing poundages of paint on it.
That's Brian Rutenberg. He grew up in Myrtle Beach, studied in Charleston with William Halsey, who we just mentioned a minute ago, and is now a very successful artist in New York. We did a retrospective of his work about 4 or 5 years ago, so it's great to have his work back in the gallery again.
You would probably be interested in an artist up there in Greenwood. His name is Dick Inglaze, mm-hmm. and he's developed a way to actually use cement for abstract art.
Oh, wow, that's great. I'd love to take a look at his work sometime. Absolutely. That's the great thing about South Carolina art. There are people all over the state in different communities, some that we know a lot about and some that, you know, are brought to our attention every day. So it's great to find out about new artists.
Absolutely. Well, listen, I sure appreciate you giving us an overview. And Dirt Boy, I think we'll be talking to you more, maybe in the pottery exhibit. So thanks for much for coming by here today.
Thanks, Ann. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, I do think it is about time for us to hear a word from our sponsors. Tut, where are we going to go now?
We'll go over to the space science area and talk about the Three Charleses.
The Three Charles. You know, this is phenomenal, though. I just want to give, looks like Tom is over there at the public telephone. God, when they used to actually have a telephone booth right there. And, of course, if you look around, you see all the old-timey TVs, mm-hmm. things that we wouldn't, that kids today would not even recognize.
That's right. But they were common to, you know, people over 40 or 45 or whatever. And it just shows you how fast technology moves. I mean, in our own lifetimes. But when you think about, say, our grandmothers and grandfathers, my grandmother, for example, was born in the 1890s before automobiles. So she was born in the horse and buggy days. She saw movies, radio, television. She saw men land on the moon in one lifetime. And there are many people who saw the same thing. Many people alive today who saw these kind of changes. So it's just amazing. But the State Museum shows you this history because we preserve it, and we also, of course, want to look to the future as well. It's not just about the past, it's about the present and looking toward the future.
You know, one of the things you showed us, I'm just going to keep talking, I think we'll just maybe talk here for a second.
Okay.
You showed us that machine that did it on tape. Well, tell us a little bit about that and why we don't have many old TV programs preserved.
Oh, that's right, because the early television programs were all broadcast live, for one thing, and the only way to preserve them in the early days was through what we call a kinescope, and they would actually take a film camera and film the monitor there in the studio, so there was a record of what was going out over the air, but it was a couple of generations down from the live broadcast. It was not broadcast quality later, so that people would not be able to, you know, rebroadcast it today and nobody would watch it. But in the early days also, I Love Lucy was one of the first to actually film the shows and then show the film on television. So that's why that show has been preserved. And the Jackie Gleason show, The Honeymooners, was done with the Dumont Electronicam, which was invented by Thomas Goldsmith of South Carolina. And it did two things. It broadcast the show and at the same time filmed it. So that show was able to be filmed and preserved as well. So that was a kind of a third way. Do it all live, all film, or combination of film and live. So that's why some of those early shows cannot be seen again today, because they were just broadcast live.
Absolutely. Well, you know, speaking of Dumont, there is a famous jewelry designer named Dumont also. So how about that? Well, we're not talking about that here today. We're talking about the museum. Gosh, it's got to take a lot of work to keep all these exhibits so beautiful. You got a lot of kids here today looking at all the exhibits. How big a staff have we got here?
We've got about 24 full-timers, which is a lot less than we used to have before all the economic problems that everybody's had. But we have a lot of part-timers, about 50 or so, and a lot of volunteers. And thank the Lord for those volunteers. They're great people. They're enthusiastic, as the rest of our staff is, of course. But the volunteers really have it in their hearts, because they just give their time freely to come here and help with whatever we need to do, either conducting tours with children or helping to clean artifacts or label things or make copies of things or just whatever we need doing. They come in and do it, so bless their hearts.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to hear a word from our sponsors when we come back. I think we're going to where the Space Center and the Three Charles, so don't you go away. This is WLMA right here in Columbia, South Carolina, broadcasting to you back in Greenwood, South Carolina. We'll be right back.
Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We are broadcasting live right here from the South Carolina State Museum here in Columbia. This is a phenomenal place. I have to admit, in all my lifetime of living in South Carolina, even though I know the museum hasn't been here all this time, I have never been here, and I am duly impressed, let me tell you. It's fabulous. But one of the things we're going to be talking about right here are with Tom Falvey, who made the trip up there to Greenwood right after Valentine's Day, I think, wasn't it, Tom?
It was. I know that I was looking at all that jewelry in your case, thinking about all that lovely stuff for Valentine's Day. I just looked, though, just window shopped that time.
Okay. All right. Well, Tom, what are we going to be talking about here? The Three Charles. Now, how are they significant, and what do they bring to the table here?
Well, you know, this is the science and technology floor, and we do have so many famous people in South Carolina, so many astronauts and scientists. And our Three Charles are Charles Townes, Charles Duke, and Charles Bolden, and all South Carolina natives who really have made an impact in the science and in our world. So right here is Charles Townes, and Charles Townes invented the maser, which was the precursor to the laser. And so he was actually using microwaves rather than light to make a device that ultimately became something that changed the world.
Now, when was that? What year?
That was in the 1950s. So 1959, he received a patent for the MASER, which stands for Microwave Amplification by the Stimulated Emission of Radiation. So we love that kind of stuff here. And ultimately, it was light amplification, obviously. But then in 1964, he received the Nobel Prize, shared the Nobel Prize for his work, which is so incredibly amazing to be here. And we have that Nobel Prize right here at the State Museum.
Now, is he still living?
He is. In fact, he still works, which is amazing. He still travels. I believe he's still on the Furman board. And he is at the University of, Berkeley, University of California, Berkeley. And I think he's 96 years old now. And we still talk to him. And every once in a while, he calls us and says, how's my Nobel Prize doing? And we tell him it's just fine and to safely, you know, cased here.
That's fabulous. So we have one Charles. Now, who else do we have for
Charles?
Well,
right around the corner, we have Charles Bolden. Charles Duke. We may as well talk about Charlie Duke. So two astronauts, and this is, and I don't know where you want me to stand. I know you're getting some video too, but this is great because this is the Apollo 13 suit that Charlie Duke would have worn had he gone into space. You know, that crew had been scrubbed because of some concerns over illness. And so this is his training suit. Charlie Duke from Lancaster, South Carolina, wore this suit to train for Apollo 13. And had he been on that mission, of course, it could have been a very different thing for him as well. He might have been starring in a movie as well. But not only was... or at least someone would have played him, and someone did. And not only that, he was Capcom. He was the person who was on the ground talking Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin down onto the moon surface during Apollo 11. So he was that important person telling them what their fuel reserves were and step-by-step how they were gonna get down to the moon surface. So Charlie Duke is an amazing character, still alive down in near Houston, Texas, where he settled, still makes it here, and a wonderful man. So also major history with a man like that.
And I understand that you actually had his original suit, but then the Smithsonian called it back. And Tut told me that he just happened to be studying up and found out there was a training suit, which is how you ended up with the training suit here.
Well, I'm glad. I didn't know that, how we got the training suit. But, you know, the original suit would have been great. The suit that, because, of course, he also went to the moon. He went to the moon in Apollo 16, the second to the last Apollo mission that made it to the moon before they were scrubbed. And so he was one of only 12 men in the world who ever walked on the moon, rode around in that that buggy, you know, the lunar buggy that they had, and he was up there doing just amazing things for South Carolina. And he collected more moon rock samples than any other Apollo mission astronaut and brought them back. And of course, we have one of those samples right here from his mission.
You have an actual moon rock here?
That's right. And of course, that's on loan. You can't own one of those, although I know that they were distributed to politicians throughout the world by the Nixon administration for a while. So some people own them, little fragments, but we have a nice big chunk. And this was Apollo 16 was the only mission that went to the highlands of the moon. The highlands is a very different geologic site. So it was a very important mission because they were getting data that no other Apollo mission got.
Wow. Okay. So you can come look at actual spacesuits here. What else is here with the three Charles as we're walking around? God, I see all these telescopes. But I guess we're going to get to that later, aren't we?
We are.
Yes. So who's the other Charles here?
Right. Well, one is someone who's in the news right now a lot, and that's Charlie Bolden. Charles Bolden is from Columbia, South Carolina, which is such an amazing thing, once again, to have a Columbia native, a South Carolina native, to do such amazing things. Was a commander on many space shuttles, so more current astronaut missions, and now is the administrator. So he is the head administrator at NASA, first African-American to be to be the full-time administrator. And so he has made history there. He has made history because in 1990, he was the commander on the shuttle mission that launched the Hubble Space Telescope, which has given us so many great images over the years. Also a great friend of the museum and loves what we're doing with space and some of the projects that we have. So Charlie Bolden, just a great astronaut, and you can see him right here in his earlier days as a Marine pilot and early days as a NASA pilot, and then also his more recent images here during his NASA administrator days.
I think I saw an interview with him when he took over after the last flight. Then he actually became the administrator, and he was talking about they actually were excited about the future of NASA. And, you know, I was talking to Tut earlier. We were talking about, I don't know how you feel about it, but do you think we need to go back into space, Tom? I mean, it was such an exciting time in our lives.
I do. You know, everyone who talks about going back into space doesn't always talk about just the fact that we're going back to collect data or learn more about our planet and other planets in space, but also that we're exciting the next generation of scientists and engineers and people who really can do some wonderful things for the United States. And, you know, there are so few students now who are excited about science and engineering. And this is really where so many of the great advancements are made in our world. So, yeah, we need to have an excited population, and we need to have people getting out there and going back into space. So I do think so.
I do. So this is some phenomenal exhibits here. You've got to come see it. The moon rock, the actual moon rock. It's right over here, isn't it? Yes. And it's in a very special, I guess I can't get into that case and touch it, huh?
No, in fact, there are very few people who know how to turn off that alarm, and I've only seen it done once, and I only saw part of that process. But it really is a very special system to keep that alarm and safe. And then, you know, behind us, we also have some wonderful artifacts from the Apollo 16 mission, actual things that were on the moon's surface, including Charlie Duke's wristband with all of his instructions as to what to do. So you can see just
what to do if you have a memory lapse. Hey, that's going to do it for us right now, Tom. We're going to have to hear South Carolina news and a word from our sponsors. You know, South Carolina news right here in Columbia. I'm here, Tom's here, Tuts, and Angie's got the camera. Hey, we'll be right back. Don't you go away.
What does WLMA stand for? Well, it stands for Wow, Let's Meet Again, right here on 1350 AM, Greenwood and the Lakelands News Talk radio station.
All right, we're back here right now. Yes, we are. We are looking over, gosh, this floor is absolutely fascinating. You've got the copy of the Hunley. We've got that great aircraft over there that we're going to talk more about a little later. And then we've got the South Carolina, what is that called
Canal
there?
And Railroad Company's best friend of Charleston. Yeah, it's a replica of the first American-built locomotive, and we'll talk more about that later, too.
Absolutely. And then we've got this big dugout canoe down here that is still attached to a huge tree root system, right?
That's right. It's the only one like it in North America. So it's pretty exciting to have something like that in our collection.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to talk more about that later. But we wanted to talk about the telescopes here. Now, Tom Falvey here, you, of course, are getting ready to build a huge, huge planetarium here and everything. And, of course, the telescope that is going to be the centerpiece is right here in the museum right now. What can you tell us about that, Tom?
Yeah, this is one of 13 Alvin Clark telescopes in the State Museum's collection, and this will not be collected just to look at. We will look through it. And this is a 12 3/8 inch, which means that's the diameter of the lens. So 16-foot long telescope. We'll use this to observe the planets. We'll look at this. We'll look at nebula. We're going to look at the moon and the sun, of course, with probably a smaller telescope. This is a little big for that. So it's being all reworked so that we can attach cameras to it and send all those signals out over the internet so that people can access this anywhere.
And, of course, I understand you'll also be able to use that in the planetarium where you'll have amphitheater, 125 people will be able to watch, and they'll be projected onto a screen.
Exactly. So we have an event coming up this summer, it's called the Transit of Venus, which happens very rarely in groups of 8 years. But at any rate, it's the kind of thing we could point a telescope into the sky, and then we could broadcast that image to a screen anywhere. So we can do that either to a classroom or to a home computer or into our own planetarium.
Now, the planetarium, when exactly? I understand. I mean, I was blown away when you told me about it the last time, that it's a $23 million project and it is paid for. Now, I know you're still raising funds for additional things, but I think it's phenomenal that it's already paid for.
Yeah, it took a lot of work, and we talked to a lot of people to make that money dream come true. And actually, half of that came from the South Carolina state government and the people of South Carolina, so it truly is a project of the state. And, of course, the rest was all from individual and private and company donors, but it also includes this observatory planetarium, a 4D theater, which will be just a blast, and then the new telescope galleries, as well as a whole new lobby space and store. So it's a very, very big project for the State Museum, and the first time we've done anything in 23 years of this magnitude. We've done a lot in between, don't get me wrong. Yeah,
that's right. Now, of course, over there, it's showing pictures of what it's going to look like, a video. But when are we anticipating having this built?
We're looking at 2013, so sometime late 2013. So it takes about 18 months to build. So we hope to start breaking ground this summer. We're in the final phases of drawing this thing and getting our budgets aligned, and then we should be ready to go. And planetarium is the first area we're going to start scraping that ground and put our piers in.
That is exciting. Isn't that exciting? Tut, you have to be phenomenally excited about this project.
Oh, absolutely, because I'm the one who's got to talk about it, in addition to Tom, of course. But, you know, we're going to be promoting this magnificent expansion all over the state, and it is such a leap forward for education in South Carolina. I mean, as Tom said, we can broadcast what Big John sees into all the classrooms in South Carolina. People can come here and learn about outer space. They can learn about other things too, because we'll broadcast films in the planetarium of art. We'll do programming like laser shows to classical music or Pink Floyd or anything in between. We'll have history films, I'm sure, that we're going to be broadcasting onto the dome as well. So it's going to be a really versatile project, and it's going to mean a lot to the school children of South Carolina and, of course, the visiting public.
Yes, I think so. I think the adults ought to get in on this program here. Now, Tom, we're going to walk over and take a look at all the telescopes here. What can you tell us about the telescope collection that you have here? Is it one of the largest?
It is one of the largest, and especially of South of American refractors, so glass lens telescopes. We have right now 23 American refractors from mostly the 19th century, and which are just extremely rare, including 12 Alvin Clarks, which are part of the collection. Alvin Clark was the finest telescope maker in the world during his time in the mid-19th century, right up until about the turn of the 20th, as well as telescopes by two telescopes here by Henry Fitts. Henry Fitts was the first commercially successful American telescope maker, and as well as two of his, one was his son and one was an apprentice, both of whom apprenticed. So if you take a look over here, we have a Harry Fitts. This is Henry Giles Fitts, it was his formal name, and this is the son of Henry himself. So this telescope was one of his. We also
How did you end up with this display?
Oh,
I mean, you know, my God, this is phenomenal. And I understand you even have a telescope in here. The Smithsonian does not have one of these.
Well, actually, we have a whole bunch of them. You know, the 12 Alvin Clarks, the Smithsonian does not have an Alvin Clark telescope. We have 13, counting the big one. And really, so
that's standing in the background saying 13, 13.
But the 23 American-made instruments is the greatest collection of American-made instruments anywhere in the world. And it really is wonderful to be able to look at these and talk about a time in history when America was really coming into its own in production and building things. And this is an example of that. The MOGI, which is another American-made telescope. This is from New Jersey. And then right next to that, we have a John Brashear, who was a Pennsylvania maker. So just great examples. And then over there, an English maker we don't need to talk about. No, it's a wonderful
now,
telescope.
Now, who donated this collection?
This entire collection was donated by Mr. Robert Ariel, who is a Columbia resident, was a native of originally Sumter, South Carolina, and he amassed this entire collection on his own over about 40 years. And in addition, he has a collection of books and rare astronomy texts, which were donated to the University of South Carolina and to the rare books.
Why did he donate these to the museum?
Well, he really didn't want them to be sold and separated. He really wanted to maintain the integrity of the collection, and he wanted people to see them. So the other part of the project we haven't talked about is this space that we're looking in, which only has 17 telescopes. We'll have about 63 when we're done, all spread out so everyone in the world can see what a great collection it is, so we can fulfill Bob's dream of having them all together and visible to the entire world.
Now, there's one very interesting telescope that we ought to walk over there. Didn't he build this one, Robert Ariel, build this telescope over here?
He did. You know, he wasn't just a collector, but he was a researcher. He wrote a book on Alvin Clark, and as you can see, more Alvin Clarks over here. And he also built a couple of telescopes, and this is the one he used. He was an amateur astronomer. He was a member of the AAVSO, which is the American Association of Variable Star Observers. And what they do is they look for binary stars that, you know, go around each other, and he used this telescope to observe more than 10,000 of those and record them for that organization. So kind of a weird looking telescope.
Looks like a robot, doesn't it?
It does, and I think most people think it is, and they want to play with it, so we encourage them not to, because we have collected this as part of the collection, and it's a beautiful telescope in its own way, in its own strange R2-D2 kind of way.
Exactly. Yeah. So you have the biggest collection of telescopes in the
Biggest collection of American-made telescopes in the world, and so right
in the world.
That's right, and some of the most amazing telescopes. This Carl Zeiss in the corner, Carl Zeiss Optics. Everyone knows that name. This big double telescope that looks like a binocular is one of five in the world, and so they're incredibly rare. They're not just telescopes that you know, they're not all American, and many are just so rare because of their completeness and because of that so few were made.
You know, it just is amazing that here in the little old state of South Carolina, we have such a huge collection of not only telescopes, but the telescope collection is phenomenal, which, you know, to be able to build the, what shall we call it, the Dream Planetarium, that's pretty phenomenal.
It is. And you know, we have researchers and we have people from all around the world calling us already. I was on the phone with Australia last week, been talking to London. And so people from all over the world want to know what's here and what we can teach them and what they can teach us about this collection and how we fit into the big picture of astronomy since the beginning of astronomy, formal astronomy, when telescopes were made back in the early 1600s.
This is pretty darn cool to be here today, and this is why we came down here to the South Carolina State Museum, to be able to bring this back to you in Greenwood. You know, one of the things that I think we don't realize sometimes what's in our backyard. We always think about going to Atlanta. We think about going to the Smithsonian. I don't think the Smithsonian has a lot on what you've got right here. Tom, what can you say, Tut?
Well, actually, that's what some people call us, the Smithsonian of the South, because we, as a matter of fact, have been picked by the readers of Southern Living Magazine as one of the three greatest museums in the South, the other two being the High Museum in Atlanta and the Smithsonian, which you could argue about whether that's in the South or not. But anyway, we think we're right up there with major museums in a lot of ways, and certainly this telescope. As I was telling you earlier, our collection now of Alvin Clark telescopes exceeds the collection of Alvin Clark telescopes in the Smithsonian by more than 50 trillion times, conservatively, because we have 13 and they have zero. So we're
like
proud of that.
Whatever number you want to put in there, Tut, that
exactly.
Floats your boat.
Exactly. It could get bigger, but we don't want to brag.
All right. Well, we, I think, should hear a word from our sponsors. When we come back, we're going to go tour the Open Bodies exhibit. I tell you what, you will be blown away. Now, that exhibit's only going to be here, what, till?
April 15th.
So if you would like to go see this exhibit, make time to come see it. Hey, when we come back, we'll be down there in the Open Bodies exhibit. Don't you go away.
Gold dust at my feet on the sunny side of...
This year will be a simpler year. One fine gift to last a lifetime from Mother Earth with love. A diamond to light the way and create the energy to keep your love alive. Only at Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72 Greenwood, 229-6276.
Okay, we are back here, and we are in the Body World Vital exhibit right here. This is the third venue it has been to. Now, there's been lots of Body World exhibits, but this one is a little bit different. What can you tell us about it being a little bit different?
This is different because it's the first one that is of a size that the South Carolina State Museum could bring in, because the others were something like 15,000 square feet. You know, your Londons, your Parises, your New Yorks could handle that. And even though we are the largest museum in the Southeast, still that was a little bigger than the free space that we would have for a traveling exhibit. We have 6,500 square feet, which is a huge area to cover here, but that it fits really nicely into our museum, and it's a wonderful exhibit. And really, this exhibit talks more about the theme that the body is made for action and for achievement and for motion. And a lot of the bodies are actually placed in athletic type poses, like the runner, the singer, the swordsman, the two flamenco dancers. And so that's what makes this particular one stand out. The others, I think, had their own themes, but that's what this theme is of Body World's Vital, is because the body is made for action. And as a matter of fact, the Germans who put it together call this the most American of the Body World's exhibits. I don't know why, but
are they saying we exercise or we need to exercise?
Probably both. Yeah, probably both. Some of us need to exercise, some of us already are doing it, you know.
You know, we walked around and looked at the exhibit, and Tom, you know, what is your favorite part of this exhibit here?
You know, I don't know. My favorite part has really been watching the people who come react to it, you know, and I think I've gotten to the point now that I've seen it all so many times that, but I think what's most fascinating to a lot of people is how tightly packed our organs are. And, you know, so you look at the cavity, thoracic cavity and the abdomen, and you see it, and it's all just amazingly packed in there, and you wonder how it all can work together. And I think that's the thing that fascinates me. And we know when we listen to people and we see people interact with these exhibit pieces, we hear them say things that are just so interactive in a very non-interactive exhibit. Like, you can't play with any of this stuff, of course, but they say, you know, that's my stomach, or that's your stomach, or, you know, that's your heart. And it's really amazing how people are associating themselves with this exhibit.
Absolutely. Now, one of the other things, Tom, we looked at the lungs, smoking lung and the non-smoking lung.
Right.
I mean, you really get a picture of what's happening in there.
Absolutely. People can see what's happening inside their bodies and what they do to themselves when they do certain things. Another thing shows a normal slice of a thigh and the thigh of an obese person that's just filled with fat. So they can see if they don't get exercise, if they eat badly, they can do terrible things to their bodies. If they smoke, they can just char up their lungs. And the good thing about this is that the previous incarnations that have gone around the world and been seen by more than 33 million people, seeing these charred, blackened smokers' lungs has caused thousands of people to quit smoking on the spot. And so that's the wonderful thing about an educational exhibit of this type, is it can have the effect, and actually has had the effect, of actually saving people's lives. If you stop smoking before you get cancer or emphysema or heart disease, you can maybe prevent these things from happening to you. And even if you've been smoking a long time, as soon as you stop smoking, your lungs start to clear, and you're going to get more time added onto your life, even if maybe you've gotten some damage already. So this is a very important exhibit, not only from disease prevention, but exercise and teaching people what's inside them, how it works together. And this is the miracle that is the human body. It's wonderful. And we haven't pointed out really yet, though, that there are 14 complete human bodies, complete real donated bodies here. Everything, you know, muscles, blood vessels, genitals, even the internal organs, the bones, brains, the whole thing. And it's very tastefully done, and just shows people, you know, how they work. And I think it's good that when you know what's inside you, when your doctor tells you something, you've got an enlarged heart or you've got a fatty liver or something, you know more what he's talking about, so you can take better care of yourself.
Absolutely. Now, of course, one of the things about it, when I was telling people we were coming down here, people would tell me, "Oh, Ann, I hope you're not going to do a whole show on that." But, you know, when you see these bodies, they don't look the way you really think that they would. It's not as, grotesque or whatever. It's really very tastefully done.
It really is. The goal is education. And, you know, when people talk about, "Oh, I wouldn't even think about that," I tend to tell people, you'd be surprised how many people have, because the response we've had is overwhelming. We've never had the kinds of numbers of folks come through our doors as we've had with this exhibit. And it really is designed for you to learn about what's going on inside your body and what is inside your body. And it's just fascinating. And, you know, there's an entire section on diet and diets around the world. And it's amazing to look at what people eat around the world and kind of study them and study ourselves. And it's just fascinating.
You know, let's take a walk over here to the Alzheimer one. You know, this shows how your brain, what happens when your brain is has Alzheimer's affected by it. And of course, you also have a lot of good text exhibits in here that tell you what dementia and what happens. There's the letter that Ronald Reagan wrote, and I was just fascinated to see the brain over here, Tut. I mean, mm-hmm. It's just phenomenal what happens. They say they're lesions, but to me, I've already told you this, to me they look like those little red worms that you see, and it just kind of takes over the brain, doesn't it?
It really does, and you can see actually the effect Alzheimer's on the brain. In another area, you see a slice of the brain that's been affected by a stroke, and how that affects the brain, and different things all the way through, different slices. Some things are represented in very thin slices, some of them entire organs, some of them entire bodies. And so it's a multifaceted look at the body from different angles and different things, you know, organ by organ, system by system, body by body. And it's just astounding.
You know, one of the exhibits here I remember we looked at showed all the arterial system, just all of that going through it. What's your favorite one out of all of these, Tom?
Well, actually, when you talk about the arteries, it is amazing that Gunter von Hagens and his team, Gunter von Hagens is the person who developed plastination, the process. It's amazing that he can take every artery and create an entire human form using that. And to be able to look at all of that, and I give blood, I know Tuck gives blood regularly too, and to be able to look at these arteries where they're taking blood and to be able to identify with it's truly fascinating. I mean every single part of it. This is one exhibit that people really read label copy in, and that's really rare. A lot of times people come to museums and they kind of rush from thing to thing, but people spend a lot of time in here reading everything and learning about what makes us tick.
Absolutely. Now, let's see. There's also, there is the heart there. There's the smoker's lungs. And, of course, this three-dimensional one that you have that shows how the whole organs fit together there, that's pretty amazing.
Right. They open up the body cavity so you can see the inside of the ribs and the muscles there. And then you can see all the inner organs there from the lungs and the heart packed together with the diaphragm beneath it, the liver and the stomach and the small intestine.
And your intestines are all cramped up there,
too. They really are, you know. If you stretched them out, I don't know how long they are, but they're quite long, 30 feet, something like that, but they're all neatly packed into you and the different things. And of course they've split the skull open here so you can see the brain in one part, the eyes and the face, and that can
actually looks, instead of human, it looks surreal, doesn't it?
It does, but at the same time it's a wonderful teaching tool, I'm sure. As a matter of fact, this whole thing started when Gunther von Hagens invented the plastination process to better preserve bodies for medical school so that medical students could study the body, and it was such a success that he said, you know, this stuff is important, everybody needs to see this. So he began the Body Worlds Project. And this is an interesting thing, Anne. It's the only company like this. There are some knockoff companies that have copied him, but this is the only one with its own foundation where people can donate their bodies to science and education. And 13,000 people have done that. So many people that they have stopped soliciting bodies. And people sometimes come to them and say, I want to donate my body, but this has been that successful that they've had to just stop, you know, soliciting bodies.
Wow. Well, let's see. Well, what time is it there, Angie? How are we doing on time? It looks like we're coming up on that 1 o'clock hour. Is it, we got 2 minutes here. Well, if you'd like to come to this bodies exhibit, Tut, what do you need to do?
Just come on down to the State Museum. You can look on our website and buy tickets in advance if you like.
And what's the website?
The website is SouthCarolinaStateMuseum.org. You can get all the information, the prices, and the times, because there are timed tickets to go through the exhibit.
Okay, so you can get tickets. It's only going to be here till
April 15th.
We are here with WLMA right here in Greenwood, South Carolina. No, we're not. We're in Columbia, folks. That's right. We're broadcasting back to you in Greenwood, South Carolina. We're going to have videos. We're going to have we are also going to have some more that we're going to do. We're actually going to end the show right now, and then we're going to tape some more so we have some more stuff to present to you, but look forward to it. You know, this has been a phenomenal trip down here. Have you ever had a radio station go around and walk around and do this kind of stuff, Tom?
Not like this. We've had reporters do individual news stories at one particular exhibit, but not up and down the stairs and all that kind of thing on different floors. It's wonderful, and we thank you for coming. We're delighted to have you and hope you'll come back. Hope everybody in Greenwood County and everybody else in the state will come see us.
That's right. You got to make the trip down to the South Carolina State Museum. It's easy to find right off of 26, so don't hesitate to make the trip. It's a great day trip for the kids. Look on the website and find out the hours, or give us a call at WLMA. We'll help you out. We'd love to. Thanks so much. This is WLMA right here live from Columbia, South Carolina at the State Museum. Bye-bye, everybody.